Welcome everyone. I can see people joining us for today's BIPs webinar, our July webinar, the last one before we go on a summer break. I'm just going to wait a couple of moments to allow a few more participants to join onto the Zoom, and then I'll just make some brief introductory and welcoming remarks before we move on. To the webinar and for Leila to discuss her work with us. So welcome to everyone who's joining. I'll just wait like maybe one half a minute, one more minute, and then I'll get started. But welcome everybody who's coming on so far. On a warm summer's day, hopefully everyone's having nice sunshine today. We're having a bit too much sunshine in Cambridge. Where I am based. Okay. I will just get started because I've got a few introductory remarks, and then people can be joining while I get through these slides. So welcome to everyone who's joined so far to this July webinar, where we're going to be joined. We are joined already by Leila Rahimi Bahmani, and she's going to be speaking about literature in the service of monolingualism, Turkophobia in modernist Persian poetry. So we're absolutely delighted. I think this is a really interesting and probably understudied topic. So we're very privileged to have Leila joining us. And I'll just talk through a few introductory slides that we're going to move on to. So first of all, if you've joined us and found out about the webinar today because you're already a member of BIPs, the British Institute of Persian Studies, then welcome. And this is really one of the key kind of features that brings the community together every month online around the world. But if you're not already a member of BIPs, please do consider joining us. You get access to the Iran Journal. You get discounts on some of our events and on some publications. We publish some books. We have a book series as well as the journal. And it really helps with that networking. You get put in touch with other members of BIPs. It's a really great and growing community. And there are funding opportunities, which I'll speak about in a moment, but that you can be eligible to apply for research funding and student funding and travel funding. If you are a member, and do support us because we survive on very little funding. So you can follow that QR code if you are interested. And here we see the deadline for the upcoming travel career research and research assistant grants is you've got plenty of time if you want to put together an application. That's the deadline is the 11th of September. But yeah, you would need to become a BIPs member ahead of or at the same time as making that application. So check out our website bips.ac.uk to find out more information about that. We'll be taking a short summer sort of recess, a break from our webinar series in August, but we will be returning at the end of September, the 29th of September, where we're delighted to have Firuze Kashani Sobet joining us to speak about authority in attire, revisiting the unveiling decree of 1936. So make a note of that date in your diaries, and we hope to see many of you there. And if you want to make sure you don't miss out on any of our events, please do follow us on socials, look at the website. You can find previous webinars that have been recorded and made accessible on the YouTube channel, and of course, you can consult the website. Just to remind you of our events policy, I just want to just put that there, so just to make sure that we're all polite. I'm sure we all will be. So just to make you aware of the events policy, and I'm just going to hand over in a moment to Leila. We're delighted to have Leila joining us. She's a professor, guest professor of Iranian studies at the Institute of Near and Middle East at Ludwig Maximilians University at München. And she's got a wonderful book looking at Farrukh Farrokhzad and Sylvia Plath. And her more recent book, published last year with Edinburgh University Press, called Azeri Turkish Narratives in 20th Century Iran Resisting Monolingualism, is something that links in with what she's going to be talking about with us today. So do go and look that out and have a read, because that's a wonderful book. And I will hide myself now, hand over to Leila, and I'll pop up again at the end for some Q&A. So we'll be listening to Leila's talk, and then there'll be a chance for question and answer where you can type into the Q&A box at the end after her talk. Thank you very much, and over to you, Leila.
Thank you very much for the invitation. So do you see my PowerPoint presentation?
Yeah, this is perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much again. So the title of my presentation today is Persian Literature in the Service of Monolingualism, Turkophobia in Modernist Persian Poetry. With the growing context between Iran and the West since the Qajar period, Iranian intellectuals, mesmerized by the industrial, economic, scientific, political, and cultural progress of the West, developed a deep anxiety towards it. Viewing the West with ambiguous feelings of attraction and apprehension, they sought to diagnose Iran's problems and find ways to free their own country from backwardness. They adopted some Western ideas of enlightenment and modern state-nation, appropriating them to their own conditions. When the first Pahlavi king Reza Shah assumed power through the coup of 1921, he sought to forge a distinct identity for Iranians and hastily modernized Iran by following the proposals of these intellectual propagandists resorting to force and violence. The unwavering determination and resort to absolute power and even violence, iqtidar, was indeed expected and prescribed by some modernist intellectuals as the only way of efficiently curing the country and saving it from backwardness. Monolingualism as a core element of nation-state was adopted by Iranian propagandist intellectuals and politicians. The idea of one language, one state, where a single language functions as a cohesive force for the nation and other languages are seen as noxious and detrimental to nation's unity and national pride, soon prevailed within Iran. Persian was adopted as the primary marker of the Iranian nation, distinguishing it from neighboring countries and their languages, much like Shiism was used to mark territory and political power against the primarily Sunni neighbors during the Safavid period. In this context, the existence of other languages, particularly those common with neighboring countries in the frontier regions, became extremely unsettling for Iranian nationalists who had adopted a definition of their nation through the single language of Persian. In this nationalistic imagination, a single language, that is Persian, was held to ensure the organic unity and political health of the nation. Other languages were regarded as unwanted foreign elements and ailments to that otherwise sane unity. It soon became a moral and political obligation for all members of the nation to immediately and unwaveringly reject these foreign elements and heal the nation. In this deeply integrated aspect of Iranian identity, resorting to any mother tongue other than the sanctified Persian language, especially by granting the prestige and permanence of a written form, was equated with disloyalty to the nation and was rejected and severely punished. Stigmas such as agents of aliens and separatists, and in the case of Azeri Turkish, the pan-Turkist, became pervasive. The assumption of monolingualism as the norm and pathologization or othering of multilingualism as aberrations has been labeled differently by various linguists, such as monolingual bias, monolingual perspective, monolingual mindset, monolingual habitus, monolingual paradigm, and monolingual chauvinism. In the Iranian context, this bias has been recurrently referred to as Persian chauvinism, chauvinisme farce or chauvinisme farsi. The monolingual bias was further complicated with the popularization of racism in Iran and the mythologization and idealization of Aryan race by recurrently equating language with race. These ideas were adopted to suppress and marginalize different linguistic or ethnic groups in Iran. Another interconnected essential element of all nationalisms is the distortion or reinterpretation of past and glorification of that illusory history, sometimes referred to as archaic nationalism. The French Orientalist, historian, philologist, and philosopher Ernst Renan states, getting its history wrong is part of being a nation. And the prominent socialist and political nationalist Karl W. Deutsch asserts, a nation is a group of people united by a mistaken view about the past and hatred of their neighbors. Modernist Iranian politicians and propagandist intellectuals aim to create and emphasize a pure, homogenized Aryan Persian nation in the ancient past by renouncing other languages and cultures as unwanted foreign elements forced upon Iranian territory throughout history. They stress the necessity of returning to that pure Iranianness and Iranian past by homogenizing Iranian language and culture through linguistic purism and cultural cleansing, Persianization, and glorification of pre-Islamic, pre-Arabic, pre-Mongolian, and pre-Turkic Persia. Many prominent intellectuals and ideologues of the time made Persianization and scathing denunciation of other languages, particularly Turkish and Arabic, their passionate call. Among them are Sayyid Hassan Taghizadeh, Taghi Arani, Muhammad Ali Furughi, Abbas Iqbal Ashtiani, Sayyid Ziauddin Tabatabai, Sayyid Hassan Taghizadeh, I mentioned Mahmoud Afshar Yazdi, Nazeh Natiq, and Hussein Quli Katebi, Shahrukh Meskoub, Yahya Mahyar Nawabi, whose ideas were also adopted and repeated by later figures even to date. These early figures were mainly under influence of the Berlin Circle Iranian intellectuals who emulated monolingualism and the concept of a mother tongue propagated by the 18th century German philosophers such as Johann Gottfried Herder, Wilhelm von Humboldt, and Friedrich Schleiermacher. The idea that one mother tongue is a key structuring element of a culturally and linguistically homogeneous nation state. The idea that soon turned into an essential feature of modernity. Although these intellectuals advocated learning other languages, they promoted modern monolingualism. Some had other different models of monolingualism in mind for the Persianization of Iran. For instance, Dr. Mahmoud Afshar Yazdi repeatedly refers to French model, particularly the monolingualization policies in the Alsace-Lorraine frontier, or promotes Americanization as the, quote, very prudent and wise system worthy of imitation, end of quote, for Iranization, Irani Sakhtan. This is the word he uses. Or Yahya Mahyar Nawabi, a scholar of ancient languages of Iran and professor at the University of Tabriz, even goes further to propose the establishment of camps, which he calls towns for children in Turkophone areas where the children of Turkic people should be Persianized from early age to completely eliminate their exposure to Turkish. The imaginative utopian model of homogeneity, organically linked by a single language, was adopted to structure institutions and disciplines, striving for the ideal of a nation with a single language, also became a moral obligation for individuals and all institutions. The nationalistic ideals of Iranian modernist intellectuals soon became pervasive in all cultural, social, literary, and political domains. Some examples of monolingualist ideals of the prominent intellectuals have been studied in the chapter one of my book, Azeri Turkish Narratives in 20th Century Iran, Resisting Monolingualism. In literature, they were propagated through various forms and genres in verse and prose and even drama. Moreover, this monolingualism and a particular aversion to Turkic languages aligned perfectly with the ideologies of the Pahlavi government, which had seized power from preceding Turkic dynasty of Qajar. To craft and maintain legitimacy and authority, it was necessary to redefine the past and denounce the previous dynasties. In my article, I will present how the fear and aversion of Turkish, the disdain for pre-Pahlavi Turkic ruling dynasties, and as well as Turkic neighbors, were reflected in Persian literature by examining a few prominent modern poets. The monolingual Persian bias has permeated the literature, particularly the poetry of modern Iranian nationalist poets. These nativist nationalist poets regard Turkic culture as despicable foreign intrusion, often despising it as much as, if not more than, the earlier Arab and Mongol cultures brought by conquest. In this presentation, for the sake of time, I will concentrate on one single poet, Mirza Abul Qasim Arif Qazvini. An exemplar of this brand of linguistic nationalism is the prominent musician, singer, and poet Mirza Abul Qasim Arif Qazvini, a revolutionary writer during the Iranian Constitutional Revolution, who was hailed as a constitutionalist poet and as Iran's national poet, Sha'ir Milliye Iran. A fanatic Persianist nationalist, Arif's poetry is driven by the ideologies of racism, archaic nationalism, and the nostalgia for the pre-Islamic grandeur of Persian Empire. The poems and concerts of Arif had huge influence and unbelievably immediate impact on Iranian society, even among Iranians outside, for instance, in Istanbul, as attested by his contemporaries. Arif equals being an Iranian with Persian language and recurrently reveals his detest of the Turks and what he calls Turkish race. In his memoir, Khatirat, he repeatedly denounces the Turkic people by addressing them as the descendants of the Mongols. Arif Qazvini, as it is clear from his name, Arif from Qazvin, was born and brought up in Qazvin, a city in north of Iran with substantial population of Azeri, Turkish, Tati, and Gilaki speakers beside Persian. The last concert of Arif was held in Tabriz in 2 days, on 17th and 20th March 1925. In his song Tasnif, called Cheshurha, What Sedations, Arif deals with some events of 1918 and the question of Azeri Turkish language. In a note added to his divan, it is confirmed that the song was composed while he was on a trip to Istanbul at the end of 1918, and after, quote, the intention of the Turks for Iranian Azerbaijan was revealed, end of quote. In the song, Arif expresses his deep sorrow and foreboding, claiming that he is going to take his complaints to the king of Iran, who at the time was the Qajar Ahmad Shah. Meanwhile, the Caesarists held Azerbaijan. The political party Musavat, Musavat Partisi, founded in 1911 in Baku as a secret party, by 1918 had emerged to propagate pan-Turkist ideas and separation from Russia. By August 1918, The party had declared the country's independence and adopted the name Democratic Republic of Azerbaijan for their newly established state. Up until that time, the name Azerbaijan was used solely for the neighboring province in Iran. Iranian intellectuals were highly alarmed and agitated by this threatening move, finding themselves in a very fragile and vulnerable situation, weakened by the Russo-Iranian wars, debilitating foreign interventions and internal conflicts arising from the constitutional revolution. They were panic-stricken. Iran was still debilitated and bleeding from the amputation of the regions that had been severed by the knife of the Russians. That the Musavat Party named the area they now controlled Azerbaijan was taken as a threat of another blow yet to come. Mehmet Amin Rasulzadeh, upon whose initiative the Musavat Party had been established, was the party's head and the head of newly declared state. In his memoir, Gazvini recalls Rasulzadeh's speech in Turk Ocağı in Istanbul as, quote, "one of the bad days of my life," end of quote. Aref responded to these developments with alarm and indignation. The poet says he is going to inform the Qajar royal court about their deceit's veil, pardehaye neyrangeshan, of how these Turks' craftiness has ruined their land, their castle, and their royal court. Then he invokes legendary Iranian heroes Giv and Rustam, who had saved the land in ancient times. Aref finds this purported deceit coming from the Turks not unexpected, calling this the time of, quote, "the deceit game of the Turks, Dur-e-Turk Bazi." After invoking the legendary kings and mythical heroes of ancient Iran by calling them one by one, the poet says in a nostalgic tone, "The Turk in ajab nist, che ke ahle nam u nasab nist. Qadam be khane-ye Keykhosro, in ze shart-e adab nist. Ze ah u taf agar che kaf zani cho daf, bezan be sar ke in che bazist, ke dor-e Turk bazist." Such deceit coming from Turks is not surprising, because they have no name and nor lineage. The Turks stepping into the King Keykhosrow's house is far from courteous. Although you are clapping as if beating your musical instrument of death from size and heat, you should be beating your head. For what is this game? It is the time of Turks' deceit's game. Aref then moves to the question of Turkish language as a fundamental ingredient in their political strategy of laying the groundwork for what he calls Turkification, Turksazi, referred to it in terms of a game in the previous line, Turkbazi. He calls Turkish the language of Genghis in the land of Zoroaster and proposes that it should be eliminated violently. برای ترک سازی عجب زمین سازی است. زبان ترک از برای از قفا کشیدن است. صلاح پای این زبان ز مملکت بریدن است. دو اسبه با زبان فارسی از عرس پریدن است. نسیم صبح دم خیز بگو به مردم تبریز که نیست خلوت زرتشت جای صحبت چنگیز. It is such a strategy of Turkification. Turkish language is there to be ripped off from the throat. It is advisable to cut its legs out from under it, that is, to destroy the foundation of Turkish language in the land. Galloping with the Persian language, jumping over Aras, O God, leaping. Morning breeze, get up. Tell the people of Tabriz The solitary retreat of Zoroaster is not a place for the speech of Genghis. In an adaptation of the popular line by the prominent 11th century poet Hafiz, Arif addresses the people of Tabriz and Iranian Azerbaijan in general through the intermediary of the morning breeze to denounce their mother tongue. The poet then picks up the idea of how the language of region was only later changed to Turkish. Finally, by turning to another legendary martyr prince of ancient Persia, Siavash, he asks the people not to forget their origin. زبانتان شد زمیان به گوش نهان سیاه پوش و خاموش ز ماتم سیاوش گر از نژاد اویید نکرد باید این دو را فراموش. Your language disappeared, hiding itself in a corner, black clad and silent, from mourning for Siavash. If you are his descendants, you should never forget these two. By these two, the poet seems to be referring to the aforementioned prophet of Zoroastrianism, Zoroaster, and the legendary Iranian prince Siavash, who was innocently murdered by the arch enemy of Iran, the Turanian king. Arif directs his wrath at the leaders of Musavat Party as a bunch of greedy Ahl-Oz charlatans, a handful of imposters, mushti, hukkabaz, and bastards, haramzadegan. He calls the session in which the decision was made to declare this new nation the mourning ceremony for the death of civilization, Majlis-e Shuri be khatm-e marg-e tamaddun. He says if this is equality, a reference to the party's name, Musavat, the barbarism is better to be revived. In a highly metaphoric language, he then says that Rasulzadeh did not sell the region to the Turks free of charge. The poet felt deeply betrayed by Rasulzadeh, whose act he compares to traitorously selling the area, which once was part of Iran, to the Turks. For the poet, the deal he made with organization Türk Ocağı, the cultural and educational and in some periods political NGO established 1912 in Istanbul brought him no gain, only loss, tears, smoke, and thousands of potential parrots. In another poem, Arif calls on the people of Azerbaijan to abandon Azeri Turkish, which is the shameful reminder of the invasion of Tatars and Mongols, and replace it with beautiful, sweet Persian. In his Ghazal, he writes, تسان نسوزم و آتش به خشک و تر نزنم که در قلم روی زرتشت حرف چنگیز است. زبان سعدی و حافظ چه عیب داشت که اش بدل به ترک زبان کردی، این زبان هیز است. رها کنش که زبان مغول و تاتار است، ز خاک خیش بتازان که فتنه انگیز است. دچار کشمکش و شر فتنه زین آن الال ابد به تو تا این زبان گلاویز است. How could I not burn and not set fire to the guilty and the innocent because in the territory of Zoroaster is the speech of Genghis? What was wrong with the language of Saadi and Hafez that you changed it to the Turkish language, which is effeminate and lewd? Leave it because it is the language of Mongols and Tatars. Drive it away from your land because it's seditious. You will be affiliated with conflict and evil rebellions forever, as long as this language is hanging around your neck. Arif evokes the two pillars of Persian poetry, Saadi and Hafez, to glorify Persian language in his rejection of Turkish, which in contrast to the male poets is weak and unmanly, and objectified through the adjective he's. The existence of, sorry. The existence of the Turkic language in the region makes him so wrathful, so that he burns the guilty and innocent with the fire of his wrath. An obsessive emotional investment in the monolingual bias, which these works exemplify, manifests itself in the language of fetishism, in the Freudian sense, that the wholeness and aggregation of a singular language should be protected against castration, which could happen once exposed to other languages. The fetish is under constant angst and of castration and feminization by other languages. In contrast to robust masculinity of Iranian nation and its Persian literature, the Azeri Turkish language here is described as weak and unmanly, he's, thus shameful. The Azeri Turkish is castrated and castrating. He's also refers to a man or a young boy who becomes the sexual object of others. Aref probably also had this meaning in mind when describing to the Azeri Turkish language as his, implying that it is the object of others' political ambitions, such as the Pan-Turkists. In the last song in his divan, titled The Autumn Wind, Bade Khazani, which Aref sang in winter 1925 in Tabriz, in the memory of Azerbaijani heroes, referring to all heroes risen in the area throughout history, he repeats his antagonism to Azeri Turkish as a language forced into, quote, Azerbaijani's brain, and continues, در خاک فردوسی توسی توسن ترک از چرانی راه جان پوی فارسی گوی دست دل شوی زود از این الفاظ زشت بیمعنی. On the land of Ferdowsi of Tus, why do you ride the Turkish wild horse? Walk on the path of the soul, speak in Persian, wash your hands and your heart immediately of these hideous, fatuous words. Aref further prays for riddance from the, quote, disgraceful language of Turkish, Zabane Nangine Turki, which is reminiscent from the period of onslaught Turk-Tazi and encroachments Dastandazi on the ruinous Persian, Iran. So, end of quote. In another ghazal performed during a concert in Tabriz in March 1925, Aref begins his by passionately expressing his deep love for Azerbaijan, extolling ancient Azerbaijan as the location of Zoroaster's fire temple. However, he boldly declares his disdain for the Turkish language to his Turkish audience, branding it as an adversary to the nationhood, milliyet, uninvited guest, nahande mehman, and as a reminder of Genghis' ignominious era, yadgar doreye nangine Chengiz. Urging the audience to abandon the Turkish language due to its bloody history, he avows his aversion to any association with Turkish and Arabic language, Zabane Turkutazi. Contained in his aversion is his rejection of Turkic dynasties, here Turkmans, who have governed Iran. Aref recurrently reveals his hostility towards the Turkish dynasty and praises the Pahlavi. In one ghazal, he labels the period of Qajar rules in Iran as Qajar evil era, Dore Shum Qajar. And in another, he contends that Qajars are racially tyrannical. تو عدل و داد ز نسل قجر مدار امید که از نژاد ستم دادگر نمی آید. Do not expect justice or fairness from descendants of Qajar dynasty, for no just emerges from the race of tyranny. Arif had clearly developed Turkophobic sentiments. Addressing the valorous people of Tabriz, he pleads with them not to abandon the, he pleads with them not only to abandon Turkish language, but the Turks, by which he also means the Turks in the neighboring countries. Sabo, zeman begu be ahl Tabriz, ke ey hame chushir sharz khunriz, ze Turk o zaban Turk beparhiz. Zephyr, pass my message to the people of Tabriz. O you who are all like a fierce lion ready to spill blood, avoid the Turks and the Turkish language. In a poem praising the city Shiraz, sent to be published in the journal The Daughters of Iran in Shiraz, Arif requests Shirazi people to send the Persian language to crush down Azerbaijan, starting with the line Hoşa Shiraz ahdu bastanash, how blessed is Shiraz and its ancient age. It continues as on Golzar Danish ta abad manad ze Saadi bustan o gulistanash, hame chizesh fuzun ze andaze niku. فزون ز اندازه نیکو، نیکوتر از همه چیزش زبانش. زبان فارس را باید روان کرد به سرکوبی آذربایجانش. زیان آور زبانی کاندر آن بوم نشیمن کرد کوبد آشیانش. From the garden knowledge may there remain forever Saadi's بوستان and گلستان. Everything in her is beautiful beyond all measures. Yet more beautiful than all else is her language, that is Persian. The language of Fars must be sent to crush down her Azerbaijan. A harmful language in that land, indeed, it should be suppressed and its nest destroyed. These are some of the examples of Turkophobia in the poetry of Arif Ghazvini. There are more examples. Arif's glorification of ancient pre-Islamic Iran, his antagonism towards other cultures and languages of Iran, as well as his resentment of previous Turkic ruling dynasties and Iran's Turkic neighbors, fit the definition of Iranian nationalism and rightfully earn him the title of Sha'ir Milli Iran, Iran's national poet. The same sentiment prevails in the works of other poets of the period, such as Muhammad Taghi Bahar, Mahmoud Afshar, Hussein Pejman Bakhtiari, and Ghulam Ali Radi Azarakhshi. Thank you very much for the listening.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Leila. That was wonderful, and it was great to have so many examples of the work of Arif, so we could really see, and as you say, the fact that there are then more examples, we can imagine it's quite a lot. So if anyone has any questions that you would like to ask of Leila, then please do enter them in the is it there's a chat or a Q&A. There should be a Q&A box down at the bottom of your screen, and while we wait for people to have a think and see what they would like to ask you. I'm really curious, if do we know anything about what the people of Tabriz thought of Arif and of these poems, if when they were hearing them? Do we know what the reception was of Azari speakers to these kinds of statements?
There are some studies that they from the contemporaries of Arif and also from the people who were there, they say that people who were among the audience praised Arif a lot and were cheering him at the time.
Okay. Do we know if that's reliable? Do you think that it sounds, I mean, it seems instinctively surprising, but do you have any insight into that? Like, why would Azeri speakers be, I guess there's a complex relationship between
I think
Persian and Azari speak, you know, the speakers of Azari will be also speakers of Persian. So I don't know if you can reflect
I
on
think
that.
the reports are not very much reliable.
Okay, fine.
And but also there was this feeling of nationalism, which also
Yes.
was against the Turkic neighbors and also the pan-Turkism, which was going on there, and it was regarded a threat for the Iran. I can imagine that many people also praised RF in that concert, but it couldn't be that everyone was praising their language being so, humiliated and rejected.
Yes, he's quite rude, to go
Yes.
to, it's quite bold to go to Tabriz
Yes.
and make these kinds of statements. So we have and please do ask questions if you're in the audience. Someone thanking you for the talk. Just asking, someone's asking, I guess, oh, what they've asked, was there opposition to the sentiments which pointed out Iran's long history as a multi-ethnic empire? So I'm trying to,
I don't understand the
I
question.
don't actually understand the question either, that's why I'm just reading it slowly. Was there opposite? The sentiments, I guess they're asked, maybe that attendee could perhaps rephrase the question. So I'll just move on to something else. So Mollah Nasruddin has a cartoon which shows a strong disagreement against the thoughts of RF. So I guess
Yes.
that's a good, that's thank you for that contribution from someone in the audience so that we can see the response.
I think I know which the cartoon is. The people are asking, the students are asking the hoja or the teacher, why are you forcing this tongue inside our mouth while we already have a tongue, which is Azeri? So
Yes.
yes, it's true, because also in Molla Nasreddin, many things were also written in Azeri Turkish. And
Yes.
I agree with them.
Yes, it's so it's good to raise that. Someone's asking if you have any further examples, and if we were to do a contextual analysis of the words that refer to Turk in Aref's poetry. So the kinds of words he's using to describe or to refer to, in place of saying Turk, what other kind of words is he using? If we were to analyze those, they're asking how you might classify the main thematic categories. So what kind, I guess, what kinds of terms are being used to describe the Turkish people and the Turkish language?
The examples which I presented today are not all of them. There are many other cases, and there are many other really, really evil cases which Arif uses. He addresses the Turks of the Turkey. For example, in one of the poems, he even has a note that this is written in reply to Suleyman Nazif's remark, which I don't know what was their remark, but then he goes on calling the Turks as like donkeys, or they can never be civilized. They are ashamed to Muhammad. They have even ruined the religion of Islam, and he goes on and on. But I think it was something of pan-Turkism in what was written or said by Suleyman Nazif, which angered him. But at the same time, Arif does not completely separate the Turks of Turkey and Turks of Iran. So he uses these words also for them and also for the Turks Iran. So for him, the idea of being Turk and Turkish is something which should be rejected within the territory of Iran.
So all of those terms are just sort of anything derogatory that one could think of being un-Islamic or being stupid or being somehow morally corrupt. All of those kinds of terms are the terms that are used.
Yes, there was this poem, particular poem, was so bad that I decided
Yes,
not
not
to
to.
present today.
Yes. Okay. And do you look at other minority languages within Iran? I mean, is Turkish considered to be a is it particularly focused on as a threat because of that pan-Turkic kind of perception?
So as you know, we have many, many languages within Iran, but the languages which are common with neighboring countries and the languages which have large number of people, so they are regarded as a threat.
They're the threats.
For example, it's Turkish, and also there is a huge disdain which everybody knows about Arabic language also. But the other languages, because they are not such a big threat, considered, yeah.
Thank you. Someone's asking, sort of asking about when Turkish words enter into the Persian language. And I mean, they've asked the percentage. You might not know the percentage, but could you say anything about how much Turkish might be considered to have become part of and integrated into Persian language with borrowed words and so on?
We already know that there are many, many words which have been borrowed into Persian language, especially in some categories. Most of them are Turkish. For example, when we have words in military or even some political ideas, like they are adopted from Turkish. But the percentage I can say, and I don't think even there are reliable sources for the percentage of Turkish words in the Persian.
All right, I'll move on to some other questions. Someone again, people thanking you for your talk, so thank you very much, Leila. Someone's asking about some sort of related but separate thinking about earlier literary figures such as Haqqani and Nezami, and what we might know about whether they consciously chose to write Persian in poetry in Persian, sorry. Why, I guess, thinking about earlier poets, earlier literary figures, why they were writing in Persian. Was it that Persian was just so dominant from a particular point in time? Or yeah, like why was po because Persian was also used as a language of poetry outside of
Yes.
Iran. So could you, I don't know, could you tell us a
So
little bit more
many,
about?
many of the Turkic speaker poets, so the poets from the Turkic speaking areas, also embraced Persian literature consciously, and also they contributed to this literature and language a lot. But my study is about the modern
The
concept
modern,
of
yes.
one language, one state, which came with modernism to Iran, and then it was part of this Iranian national identity that we should have only one language for unity. So I can't say much about previous
Yes, I
times. We
understand.
know that there are studies that say that they. Although they could also speak in Turkish or maybe even write in Turkish, but they were mesmerized by this Persian literature and also adopted it for their poetry and works.
Do you think the sort of the reaction against the previous dynasty, against the Qajar dynasty, was an important part of that emphasis on Persian, or was it favored sort of separately from the changing away from a Qajar rule?
It was part of it, you know. It was part of this Turkophobic, this rejection of previous, especially it was very strong in Arif. So he always rejected Qajars and the previous. He was thinking that if we get rid of the Qajar, everything will be okay, or we will proceed. We will be modern, and he praised a lot the idea of republicanism, Jumhuriyet and Jumhuriyet in Iran, which interestingly, it was, the word even was banned after Reza Shah came to the throne, and he was even sent to exile by Reza Shah. So he was praising Reza Shah very much at the beginning, but then the things changed in the other direction.
So someone's thinking about this kind of this the Pahlavi era kind of elevation of Farsi. So when we're thinking about the politicians of the period, I guess so moving maybe slightly the question's moving slightly beyond Aref as a poet, that they were that this was important to their unification of the country, choosing it as the official language, focusing the new education system and all of the new bureaucracy around the Persian language. So they're just asking for a little bit more of your views on, I guess, the political, I don't know, what could we, I guess, what could we think about the relationship between the political project of nationalism and these poets and the relationship between those two?
We should always remember that this was not only for Iran, for the case of Iran. The intellectuals of the time just adopted it from other countries, as I mentioned, from the people, the intellectuals of Berlin Circle, or from the case of France, or even the Americanization and the idea of the Americanization of the native people and everything. So these ideas were imported to Iran, and so they were passionately following it because they thought this is the way to have a strong centralized government, a modern government and modern country, and they propagated it for the Iranians to join this by having this modern identity of Iranian which is associated with Persian.
Someone's asked about were there particular geopolitical fears vis-a-vis the Ottomans driving this Turkophobia?
Yes, as I mentioned, especially in some of the poems I mentioned today, in the case of RF, they were written in reaction to the fear of Pan-Turkism, that Iran will also lose these other areas of Turkic-speaking people to Turkey, or to the I don't know, northern countries. So they were this high fear among the intellectuals, and this Turkophobia was mainly a reaction to this fear of Pan-Turkism, or yes.
We've had clarification of the slightly unclear question from at the beginning. So someone they've rewritten. So they're asking sort of when Aref and these other monolingual poets or these monolingual sentiments are being raised, were there other people around who were challenging this view of the need to prioritize or the sort of the dominance of the Persian language? Was anyone pointing out the Iran's sort of history as multi-ethnic and multilingual, or were those voices too crushed?
We should have many, many voices, I think, because the people's language, and we are very much emotional with our mother tongues. This is very emotional phenomenon, is modern tongue. So, but the outspoken ones, I know, for example, Jalal al-Ahmad, which is a very strange case because he was not Turkic speaking people. And many of these intellectuals and politicians who were against Turkish and wanted to denounce Turkish, they were themselves Turk. And it's very interesting. But Jalal al-Ahmad was Persian speaking, and he criticized this in one of his books and called the policies very, very like colonialism, and said this wouldn't bring unity, but more separation and suppression of people. So he goes on and elaborates on his critical views. I think it's the book Der Khidmat
Roshan
u
Fekran.
Khiyanat. Very good.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
In one of the chapters, he talks
Yes.
about this Turkic region and criticizes the policies rightfully. And another example which comes to my mind is Şahriyar. He doesn't reject the idea. In one of his poems says, "We can't have many national languages. We can't raise all the languages spoken within territory to the level of national language." But on the other hand, he also criticizes those who insult the Turkish language and the mother tongue of so many people.
Yes. And that links nicely onto the next question, which is about mother tongue. And do we know what the mother tongue or first language of RF was?
No, I don't know.
You don't know.
That's why I also talked about it in the presentation, that he was born in Qazvin. We know he
Yes.
was born in Qazvin, and his ancestors were somewhere from Meraghe Rudbar, which I don't know where it is exactly, but we know that Qazvin has had a substantial population of Turkic-speaking people.
Yes.
But still, I don't know if Turkish was spoken in at their home or he knew Turkish.
The questioner says that apparently RF did speak Azeri,
Good.
and apparently he spoke it only though with his housekeeper in Hamadan at the end of his life, according
Yes.
to
So
the
he is
poet.
another case of against Turkish language.
So how someone's asking how much has this kind of narrative continued into the present times and extended perhaps to other minority linguistic groups? Do you trace it through to more recent times at all within your study?
In my study, no, I don't trace it, but it's present everywhere. Even when I was writing this book of Azeri Turkish narrative, which is basically studying the short stories, memoirs and narratives written in Azeri Turkish. So some people would ask me, why do you work on Azeri Turkish? Do you have separatist ideas? You ever, immediately they would connect
Yes.
anything with this language, especially when it is in written form, because
Yes.
they usually denounce the languages as vernacular or oral. It's okay if it's the language of lullaby or spoken by
Yes.
nannies. These are fine.
Yes.
If you are going to write it,
Yes.
then they get alarmed.
Yes. And I mean, in the current context of conflict and,
Yeah.
international, war, I guess these kinds of sentiments and these overreactions and fears of separatism become exaggerated in this kind of current context of conflict, I'd
And
imagine.
about this second part, which is about the other minority languages,
Yes.
I haven't studied
Yeah.
them.
Yeah.
So I hope my study opens also a way for
For
people.
others, yes, exactly. And speaking of that, another participant has just wants to share with you and with the audience that they've come across Tati speakers in Marand and Jolfa, who were in effect trilingual, and just we could sort of reflecting that perhaps surely that was the linguistic picture of Azerbaijan prior to the Safavid rule, so that we have many languages being spoken. In that period, I guess then probably across Iran, that many people would have had multiple languages that they were fluent in.
Yes, this shifting of language is very interesting. Also, previously, because of the inaccessibility of the area with mountainous area, so even the different villages would speak different kinds of Azeri Turkish.
Yes, yes,
And
yes.
gradually, I have noticed through the films they watch from Turkey, if the language is changing, they are adopting the accent and many words from Istanbul Turkish.
Yes. So language is always, it's a living thing. It's constantly changing. Someone just wants to know, was this, I'm assuming RF is just one example. They're saying that he's not exceptional, right? His treatment
No.
of the Turkish language, he's just one example. There
Yes.
were many others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I also mentioned here like
At the
Mahmut
beginning, you
Akif.
mentioned other names. Yes.
Yeah, and in especially in poetry, for example, we have Mahmud Afshar's, we have some poetry which is against which is like Turkophobic, Hüseyin Pejman Bahtiyari, Gholam Ali Raed, sorry, Raediye Azerakhsh, and they are just a few examples.
Yes. Yeah, so there's many thanks for the talk, and I think we've probably got through. Oh, there's one last question. Whether is there a connection between this Persian language nationalism and the rise of Nazism, or like support for Germany? I guess because you mentioned the influence of the Berlin Circle, so do we see a strong connection between the poets and intellectuals of this period, and I guess a bit after this period, and Germany?
This ideas of race and racism was brought also to Iran, and this Aryan it has been studied by many scholars, the Aryanism or Aryan race, and they always mix the language with race. Also in RF you see that they go to language and race back and forth as if they are the same thing.
Yes, that's
So
really fascinating.
in a sense, yes, they were adopted and they were integrated in the idea of nationhood, nationalism.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was fascinating. I'm sorry I didn't get through every single question, but I tried to cover the broadest range and where there was an overlap between questions. Hopefully that's got covered. Obviously, I'm sure people can reach out to you by email, Leila,
Yeah,
if
sure.
they would like to. And someone is asking actually how they can contact you. I'm guessing if we Google your name, the
Yes.
university page will come up. So
Yes.
that's the easiest way. So
I
this is
would.
nice. We bring people together through these webinars, which is wonderful. So you can forge connections. Yeah.
I would also like to thank you, Eva Leyla, and also for the organization, the people who organized
Yeah.
this
Yeah, thank you. Thank you
and
very much to
everyone.
Maria. Maria is behind the scenes,
Yes.
doing all of the administration and making these talks happen. So thank you very much.
And
And
thank
thank
you
you
to
to
the
everyone who
listeners.
joined us. Yeah, thank you very much, Leila. It's lovely to meet you, and we should all go out and read Leila's books, and learn more about this really fascinating topic. And thank you everyone on a summer's evening for joining us today. And I wish everyone a good rest of their day. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you,
Thank
Leila.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.